Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. This platform is dedicated to you, industry heroes. You are bold. You are brave. You dare greatly. You innovate like nobody's business. Yeah, you do. And you are changing lives, and you are changing the world. That is why this platform is here for you. We celebrate you. Tell me why we shouldn't celebrate you. You can't. You cannot tell me why we don't celebrate industry heroes, the women and men of industry, the women and men of manufacturing. You guys are amazing. You're amazing. All right, in the hot seat, we have a gentleman by the name of Brandon Fisher. Brandon Fisher, he's a director and client advisor at Simon Quick Advisors. Now, we're going to just sort of make sure that we pepper him with difficult comments and questions. And no, we're not. I'm not going to do that. So let's get it cracking. All right, before we get in the interview, I got a couple of things that I want to be able to get off my chest because I've been thinking about it. One, great quote, mark it down, write it in your book. It's a fabulous quote. It's from Winston Churchill. I'm a big Winston Churchill fan. Here it is. A positive thinker sees the invisible, yeah, feels the intangible, uh-huh, and achieves the impossible. Winston Churchill, put that down on your doggone notebook, because that is an excellent, and I mean, it really is, because when we start talking about industry, when we start talking about highlighting just the heroes of industry, one of the things that is always constant with these individuals is that they never stop educating, they never stop collaborating, and they never stop innovating. They never say, I can't be done, or no, that they don't have legacy thinking. So anyway, that particular quote, boom, jumped out and hit me across my bald head. Yeah, slap. In fact, I think I have a red spot right there. And then one last point before we get into the interview. I've got a couple of podcasts out there from the Connected Systems Institute. This is a wonderful organization brought to you by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and they are dedicated to training industry professionals of the future. Because you know as well as I do, we have this conversation about innovation, Industry 4.0, digital transformation, and everything in between. And what's interesting about it is that we need to train the workforce of the future. And that is all about what they are doing at CSI. Check them out. Go out to industrialtalk.com. Find out more, because those are great interviews. They are. They're great interviews. And I'm not patting myself on the back. It is truly the individuals that are a part of that interview. All right. Enough with the jaw-jacking. Brandon, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning. Good. Thanks for having me on.
It is so cool. Now, guys, and listeners out there, I'm looking at a stat card, and it's impressive. And you'll quickly notice that he's smarter than me, which is... I'm not sure if that's good or bad. It's not a very big hurdle there, Brandon.
I don't know if I can live up to
it. Well, I think you can. I think you're capable. All right. And for the listeners out there, give us a little 411 on who you are and where you come from. And I know that you got an education background. That's what we're all about. And you're pretty passionate about education. Talk to us.
Indeed, I am. I'm passionate about education. My first career was as a teacher. Second career was as a college administrator, and today I'm a wealth advisor. So even though I'm no longer working in education as a profession, it's still important to me. I think there's a big educational component to what we do. And in my discretionary time, I choose to support educational nonprofits with my time and energy and resources.
I like that. And There's a term, and as I was looking at your form that you filled out, ESG. Can you sort of define what that is?
Well, you know, I think in the pre-interview, you and I were talking a little bit about trends in investing and the ways that people can do good in addition to doing well with their investments. So essentially ESG is one part of the spectrum of socially responsible investing, where you're looking for a double bottom line. You're looking to make a profit, a financial profit, and you're looking to create some sort of impact, whether that's on the environment, whether it's socially, or whether it's on corporate governance. So ESG is environmental, social, and corporate governance.
Now, has that been around for a little while, or is that something relatively new? I mean, I like it. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a beautiful thing. I like it.
Sure. It's been around a while, and I think that it's a trend, certainly, in investing today. If you go to conferences about investing or, family office conferences where wealthy families are thinking about how they want to do their investing, how they want to pass on a legacy to their children, things like that, it's certainly something that's picking up momentum. And, it's a quadrupled in terms of the amount of capital that is allocated to socially responsible investing since 2008. So certainly something to be aware of if you're not already. And I think that firms like Simon Quick, where I work, are taking that into consideration, being very careful about how we invest our clients' capital.
Why? Why is it all of a sudden trending? I mean, what macro things are happening out there? Why is that trending?
Well, again, another thing you and I spoke about, which we wanted to touch on today, was this idea of the wealth gap, right? And in 2008, with the great financial crisis, there was a widening of the wealthy and those who were being left behind, sort of a hollowing out of the middle class. Since that time, if you had capital invested in the stock market, it's been a great 12 years. If you don't, it hasn't been. And that trend has really been exacerbated by COVID. Over the last 10 months since the pandemic hit, there have been some industries, some professions that have been relatively unimpacted and others that have just been devastated. So, for example, some white collar professionals have been just fine working at home. They've been able to continue to do their work without much problem, while those who work in some industries with lower wages are not able to do that. And so this problem has just gotten worse. And, I think that those who are doing well increasingly want to find balance in their lives, find meaning in their lives, find ways to make sure that we bring everybody along with us, because otherwise it's bad for the economy, it's bad for the world. My observation is that during this pandemic, people have been taking stock of how they spend their time, trying to find the right kind of balance in their lives and do things that hold meaning for them.
I know that the COVID, whatever we're living through right now, has been disruptive. We understand the negative side. We understand all of that. I try to look at the positives. I understand challenges. Got it. But there are some, from my perspective, some real interesting positive outcomes from this disruptive situation. One, I think people are willing to have conversations that are meaningful. They are willing to be more vulnerable and say, I don't have the answers. I do like that. Pre-virus, pre-pandemic, I think people are just like the weight of this world was on their shoulder. Like, I have all the answers, and I'm going to drag this world across the finish line, and I have the answers. And really, we don't. And in the world of this pandemic, it's a good thing to be vulnerable. And I think that what you're talking about is that I think, in general, people have a heart. And they have a desire to truly help humanity. And when we start seeing people who are truly hurting, we want to be able to provide a solution. We want to be able to provide some sort of help. And I think that is right. a beautiful thing. And I think that, Pre-virus, you couldn't have that conversation. Post-virus, you could come out and say, yeah, I don't feel too good today, But anyway, so let's talk a little bit about that gap. Let's talk about deploying like an ESG type of strategy, right? And help these individuals rebuild. What are some of those strategies? Right. What can we do?
Well, you know, I point out a couple of different things. One has to do with investing. And, you know, if you're interested in trying to seek that double bottom line of both doing well financially and doing good environmentally or socially, that there are plenty of options out there, ways to do that. And that, you know, there are certain kinds of investing where you're just trying to think about investing with companies in stocks, let's say, where they are trying to minimize the amount of negative impact that they have on the world, or they're trying to maximize the good that they do in the world. So you can invest in those kinds of companies. You may also choose to make a private investment with some kind of measurable outcome. You know, how many new schools can we build? How many data centers are we going to have that our runoff of renewable energy or whatever it might be, where you're actually measuring the non-financial impact of your investment.
So I have to so interrupt real quick. Now, you're going to sit there and you're going to look at a company. You're going to see these companies. You're going to look at whatever their portfolio, whatever their information on your system, right? And does that information come out and say, hey, I'm an investor and I'm looking for companies that are investing in this, and it's it's specific to, let's say, renewables, specific to feeding the poor, whatever it might be. Do you have that level of detail on your evaluation and say, yeah, Scott, we've got, you know, Acme is doing a great job. Here are the reasons why.
Sure. So you mentioned ESG. There's an organization called SASB. It's the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board. And, you know, they're one example of organizations that have come up with criteria. So is a company meeting the criteria to be considered ESG? So certainly there's a lot of data out there, and wealth management firms and investment managers tend to do the due diligence and then communicate to their clients where they should be allocating capital. And the industry is mature enough at this point that it can be done in a pretty reliable way.
Because one of the things that would pop into my head, Brandon, it would be it's great. You got that social side. That's cool. I'm Acme Corporation. I got the social side, but maybe my business model is questionable. I'm not achieving the returns that I want to. You know, it may be a little bit more volatile. Explain to us a little bit about that. How do you balance that?
Well, I think that's a conversation that an investor should have with their advisor. You know, there are ways that you can make socially responsible investments where you're not actually sacrificing any kind of financial return. At the other end of the spectrum, you may decide, you know, the financial return is secondary to me. And what matters most to me is the social impact or the environmental impact that I'm making. And in that case, you know, maybe you are investing in a project or in a company that is not generating great financial products or, profits, but that's okay. You know, maybe that's okay for you and it's not a primary part of your goal. So I think there's a spectrum, but one thing that's certainly a trend and something that we should all pay attention to is that 5 years from now, we won't probably need to talk about impact investing or ESG investing. We'll just call it investing. You know, there's enough momentum behind this where investors are just going to demand that the companies they invest in adhere to these standards.
See, that's interesting. Because the question I have is, if I'm a company today, I recognize the ESG and the desire to make that a part of my culture, part of my business model. is it important for companies today to look into that and say, hey, I'm sort of weak on this social side, and I want to beef it up and have that internal conversation. Is there a benefit from a company's perspective to do that?
Oh, I think so. And I think that that's probably that trend in that direction is probably accelerating with the new presidential administration.
Yeah.
You know, there are clear signs that sustainability and a new focus on the climate is going to drive this administration. It's going to be primary. And as we look forward in terms of what industries are going to succeed and what ones might not, certainly renewable energy is among those that will be the focus of investor capital, the focus of government subsidies, things like that. So there is absolutely a trend there. And it's my impression that business leaders across all industries are thinking about that carefully.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It's never going back in whatever the proverbial bottle, right? It's out. And as companies continue to move forward, rebuild, you know, try to prosper going forward, they've got to come up with those strategies that achieve those goals, without a doubt.
Sure.
Now, if I'm part of that group that sort of had the widening of the gap and the middle class, just something simple, something for me to hang my hat on. What can I do to try to rebuild?
Yeah, you know, the other side of the coin that we've been talking about wealth creation. The other side of that is philanthropy and service,
yes.
Right? So, I think if people are looking for meaning, if people are looking for balance and they want to do good in their communities, we talk about, the three T's, you donate your time, you donate your talent, and you donate your treasure. So find causes that you care about and, ways that you'd like to try and help out and, find effective ways to make the world better.
I like that a lot. And it's the reason for that is that, we don't address the soul and how that ability to be able to contribute to your time, your talent, your treasure, how that feeds that soul and, how important it is as an individual, as a company, whatever it might be. I think you're spot on. And I think today, as we continue to reel from whatever this, you know, squiffy world we live in there, this pandemic world, there are people that need help. There are people that, and I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, I need help, but I don't even know how to articulate the help I need. It's like, I don't even know where to go. And I would imagine, and this is to everybody out there listening, I would imagine you just got to get in the game. Just contribute something.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then, you know, when you start being philanthropic, you tend to, spread your philanthropic gifts across a number of organizations, and you see what happens. And you inevitably find that certain organizations that you support are spending your gifts more wisely, or are making a greater impact in their communities, or that your giving is providing you with a greater reward. So that's how you narrow down your philanthropic priorities. You know, you identify causes that you care about, and then you find organizations that are doing a great job in that space. And again, I think if you get involved up to your eyeballs, both as a volunteer and as a donor, that's gonna bring meaning to your life, and obviously you're gonna be helping others.
Yeah, and yes, me, being the lazy son of a gun that I am and impatient son of a gun that I am, there are plenty of locations out there on the old World Wide Web that you can do some research, to your point, relatively quick with great insights into those organizations and how they're spending the money. And it's a good thing. And it doesn't require that much effort. I mean, you're not asking people to sit there and go, okay, I want you to donate the, you know, for you to research, donate your day to try to figure it out. No, it's not that difficult. And I guarantee you there's places that are local that need your help and that would really honor your help and that are spending your spending the money and time and all of the stuff and talents wisely.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, I love it. Now, so let's talk a little bit about your organization, Simon Quick, right? What makes you guys different?
Well, so we serve a niche within within the wealth advising industry. We are a fiduciary for ultra high net worth families. That means that we make decisions for the client that are in their best interest. We're what's called a fee only advisor. So the only way that we make money is by being paid by our client, not by broker dealers, not by investment managers or anything else. So we really try to reduce any kind of bias and conflicts of interest that some other wealth management firms might have. The other thing I would say is that we provide very comprehensive wealth management for those ultra high net worth families. We're doing investment consulting, financial planning, and family office services if they need it. What I mean by that is things like property management, bill pay, household payroll for household employees, things like that. And we do other things like philanthropy consulting. You know, you and I have touched on that a little bit, but some of these families, and this is why it's top of mind for me, are really thinking about how they're going to, you know, make an impact on the world and leave a legacy for their heirs and so forth going forward. It's more top of mind than ever.
Can I find Simon Quick all around the country?
You can. We are a 17-year-old firm with a national footprint. We're headquartered in Morristown, New Jersey. I happen to work in Denver, Colorado, and I happen to be the advisor for families that are both in the Rocky Mountain region, but also in other parts of the country.
By the way, I like Denver.
It's a great place.
Oh, yeah.
It's been sunny and 60 this week.
Has it
Some
really?
Of my colleagues in the Northeast are buried in snow, a couple feet of snow in New Jersey, but here we are.
Yeah, I think they have great microbreweries there, too.
We sure do.
All right, can people get a hold of you out there on LinkedIn? Are you pretty active out there?
I'm active on LinkedIn. Our firm has a great website. If you'd like to be in touch, love to hear from you.
All right, his name is Brannon, B-R-A-N-N-O-N, Fisher, last name. And all of his contact information will be out at industrialtalk.com. That's industrialtalk.com. So there's no excuse of not getting a hold of this gent. Love the conversation, my friend.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Thank you for being a part of the Industrial Talk podcast, as well as sharing your insight and wisdom about, I love that ESG. That's pretty damn, I said damn cool. Don't be offended by that. All right,
it's
listeners.
It's been a pleasure.
We're going to wrap it up. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. All the information will be out there on industrialtalk.com. Thank you for joining, and we're going to be back with another incredible interview shortly.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.